VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, former President Donald Trump has been found guilty of criminal charges. Mario Ritter Jr. reports. Ashley Thompson has a story on the return of stolen art to Italy. Gina Bennett has this week's Ask a Teacher lesson on improving your vocabulary. Later, we listen to a story by Nathaniel Hawthorne called The Birthmark. But first,
a New York City jury on Thursday found former U.S. President Donald Trump guilty of falsifying business records to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. The jury found Trump guilty on all 34 felony charges. A felony is considered a serious crime that could result in stronger punishment. The trial marked the first time a former U.S. president has faced a criminal trial. In the New York case, government lawyers presented evidence against Trump. In an audio recording made in September 2016, Trump can be heard saying, "So what do we got to pay for this?" As he and his lawyer discussed how to suppress stories about his reported affair. Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer, said that he made the payment to adult film performer Stormy Daniels to keep her from telling the public about a sexual relationship she said she had with Trump years earlier. Cohen also said Trump's business, called the Trump Organization, repaid the money with Trump's knowledge and claimed them as legal costs. The jury also heard from former National Enquirer newspaper publisher David Pecker about a catch-and-kill plan to suppress a story from another adult magazine model, Karen McDougal. He said that payments were made to suppress stories that could hurt Trump's 2016 campaign. Trump now faces the possibility of being placed on probation or imprisoned for up to 4 years for the conviction. Judge Juan Merchan, who presided over the legal case, has set a sentencing hearing for July 11th. That is days before the opening of the Republican National Convention on July 15th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Trump is expected to be named the 2024 Republican presidential nominee for the November election against President Joe Biden. Coming out of the courtroom, Trump called the verdict a disgrace. He added, "The real verdict is going to be November 5th, by the people." November 5th is Election Day in the United States this year. Biden did not comment on Trump's guilty verdict, but his presidential campaign said in a statement, "Today's verdict does not change the fact that the American people face a simple reality. There is still only one way to keep Donald Trump out of the Oval Office, at the ballot box." Trump is certain to appeal his conviction and can continue to run for the presidency. There is also no measure in the U.S. Constitution to prevent Trump from becoming president as a convicted felon. As a president, if he wins the November election, Trump will have the power to pardon or cancel federal convictions. But he could not pardon himself in a state case like the New York trial, in which he was convicted. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Italy celebrated the return of hundreds of its antiquities from the United States this week. The property included ancient bronze statues, gold coins, mosaics, and documents valued at $65 million. The pieces were stolen years ago. They were later sold to American museums, galleries, and collectors. Their return came after a successful criminal investigation. Officials of Italy's Carabinieri Command for the Protection of Cultural Heritage presented the returned objects at a press event in Rome. A team of American officials attended the presentation. They included U.S. Ambassador Jack Markle and Matthew Bogdanos, chief of the Antiquities Trafficking Unit of the New York District Attorney's Office. It marked the latest presentation of property return in Italy's long effort to recover antiquities stolen from its territory. The thieves, called tombaroli in Italy, sold to antiquities dealers who often lied on ownership records to resell the antiquities. Markle said that the United States is firm in its goal of returning stolen property to where it belongs. "We know that safeguarding this history requires care and vigilance, and this is why we do what we do." Among the most valuable pieces presented was a 4th century Naxos silver coin. The coin has an image of the Greek god of wine, Dionysius. It was taken from an illegal dig site in Sicily and transported to Britain. Bogdanos said the coin was found in New York last year as part of an investigation into a noted British coin dealer. It was being offered for sale for $500,000. Bogdanos said that other objects were returned from New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art. The returned objects also included a life-sized bronze statue of a person, as well as several vases from the ancient Etruscan civilization. Italian officials said the returned property also included paintings from the 16th and 19th centuries that once belonged to Italian museums, religious centers, and private homes. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we finish our answer about the best way to expand your vocabulary. Many VOA Learning English fans write to us with this question: what is the best way to improve my vocabulary? We have said the best way to improve vocabulary is to really know a word. To fully know a word, we have to know its form, how it sounds, how it is written, and what its parts are. we have to know its meanings and the ideas or feelings it suggests. We also have to know how the word is normally used. Synonyms are words that have the same or nearly the same meaning. For example, big and large are used to talk about size. But often we cannot exchange one for the other. They have different usages. Both big and large can be used to describe the size of something. Big is usually used in conversation. Large is more formal. John is standing next to the big tree. The large tree fell on the house. We use big to talk about something or someone that is important. This is a big decision. We use large when talking about an amount of something. The company received a large number of complaints. Large is also a clothing size. It is bigger than a small and a medium. The shirt is a size large. Collocations are words that go together. Some words go together with other words, but their synonyms might not. For example, we say big surprise, but we would not say large surprise. Another example is unhappy and sad. They are synonyms, but they cannot always be used with the same words. For example, we would say unhappy childhood. Saying sad childhood instead does not sound as natural. When we look at English words in this way, we can see that our vocabulary expands by understanding the usage of a word. VOA fans, the best way to improve your vocabulary is to really know a word, its form, meaning, and usage. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett.
Dr. Gina joins us now to talk a little bit more about this week's Ask a Teacher. It is part three of a series of articles answering the question, how can I improve my vocabulary in English? Knowing a lot of vocabulary is really important to knowing a language, so I think this must be a popular topic. Can you review parts one and two for us?
Of course. Many people think that the best way to improve their vocabulary is to learn the definition of as many words as possible. In part one, we explain that memorizing the definition of as many words as possible isn't really the best way to improve your vocabulary.
Really? That seems surprising.
Well, it doesn't really help us to memorize the definition of a bunch of words if we don't really understand how those words are used.
Ah, I think I see what you mean. Knowing a word is more than just memorizing a definition.
Exactly. So, in part one, we talk about what it means to fully know a word. And in parts two and three, we talk a little more about how to do that.
That sounds great. If listeners would like, they should go on our website and check out Improve Your Vocabulary Part 1 and 2. Thanks again for joining me on the show, Gina.
It was my pleasure, Dan. I hope we chat again soon.
Our story today is called The Birthmark. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
A long time ago, there lived a skillful scientist who had experienced a spiritual reaction more striking than any chemical one. He had left his laboratory in the care of his assistant, washed the chemicals from his hands, and asked a beautiful woman to become his wife. In those days, new scientific discoveries, such as electricity, seemed to open paths into the area of miracles. It was not unusual for the love of science to compete with the love of a woman. The scientist's name was Aylmer. He had so totally given himself to scientific studies that he could not be weakened by a second love. His love for his young wife could only be the stronger of the two if it could link itself with his love of science. Such a union did take place, with truly remarkable results. But one day, very soon after their marriage, Aylmer looked at his wife with a troubled expression. "Georgiana," he said, "have you ever considered that the mark upon your cheek might be removed?" "No," she said, smiling. But seeing the seriousness of his question, she said, "The mark has so often been called a charm that I was simple enough to imagine it might be so." "On another face it might," answered her husband, "but not on yours. No, dear. Nature made you so perfectly that this small defect shocks me as being a sign of earthly imperfection." "Shocks you?" cried Georgiana, deeply hurt. Her face reddened, and she burst into tears. "Then why did you marry me? You cannot love what shocks you." We must explain that in the center of Georgiana's left cheek, there was a mark deep in her skin. The mark was usually a deep red color. When Georgiana blushed, the mark became less visible. But when she turned pale, there was the mark, like a red stain upon snow. The birthmark would come and go with the emotions in her heart. The mark was shaped like a very small human hand. Georgiana's past lovers used to say that the hand of a magical fairy had touched her face when she was born. Many a gentleman would have risked his life for the honor of kissing that mysterious hand. But other people had different opinions. Some women said the red hand quite destroyed the effect of Georgiana's beauty. Male observers who did not praise the mark simply wished it away so that they did not see it. After his marriage, Aylmer discovered that this was the case with himself. Had Georgiana been less beautiful, he might have felt his love increased by the prettiness of that little hand. But because she was otherwise so perfect, he found the mark had become unbearable. Aylmer saw the mark as a sign of his wife's eventual sadness, sickness, and death. Soon, the birthmark caused him more pain than Georgiana's beauty had ever given him pleasure. During a period that should have been their happiest, Aylmer could only think of this disastrous subject. With the morning light, Aylmer opened his eyes upon his wife's face and recognized the sign of imperfection. When they sat together in the evening near the fire, he would look at the mark. Georgiana soon began to fear his look. His expression would make her face go pale, and the birthmark would stand out like a red jewel on white stone. "Do you remember, dear Aylmer, about the dream you had last night about this hateful mark?" she asked with a weak smile.
None whatever," answered Aylmer, surprised.
The mind is in a sad state when sleep cannot control its ghosts and allows them to break free with their secrets. Aylmer now remembered his dream. He had imagined himself with his assistant, Aminadab, trying to remove the birthmark with an operation. But the deeper his knife went, the deeper the small hand sank until it had caught hold of Georgiana's heart. Aylmer felt guilty remembering the dream. "Aylmer," said Georgiana, "I do not know what the cost would be to both of us to remove this birthmark. Removing it could deform my face or damage my health."
"Dearest Georgiana, I have spent much thought on the subject," said Aylmer. "I am sure it can be removed."
"Then let the attempt be made at any risk," said Georgiana. "Life is not worth living while this hateful mark makes me the object of your horror. You have deep science and have made great discoveries. Remove this little mark for the sake of your peace and my own."
"Dearest wife," cried Aylmer, "do not doubt my power. I am ready to make this cheek as perfect as its pair."
Her husband gently kissed her right cheek, the one without the red hand. The next day, the couple went to Aylmer's laboratory, where he had made all his famous discoveries. Georgiana would live in a beautiful room he had prepared nearby, while he worked tirelessly in his lab. One by one, Aylmer tried a series of powerful experiments on his wife. But the mark remained. Georgiana waited in her room. She read through his notebooks of scientific observations. She could not help see that many of his experiments had ended in failure. She decided to see for herself the scientist at work. The first thing that struck Georgiana when entering the laboratory was the hot furnace. From the amount of soot above it It seemed to have been burning for ages. She saw machines, tubes, cylinders, and other containers for chemical experiments. What most drew her attention was Aylmer himself. He was nervous and pale as death as he worked on preparing a liquid. Georgiana realized that her husband had been hiding his tension and fear. "Think not so little of me that you cannot be honest about the risks we are taking," she said. "I will drink whatever you make for me, even if it is a poison."
"My dear, nothing shall be hidden," Aylmer said. "I have already given you chemicals powerful enough to change your entire physical system. Only one thing remains to be tried, and if that fails, we are ruined."
He led her back to her room, where she waited once more, alone with her thoughts. She hoped that for just one moment she could satisfy her husband's highest ideals, but she realized then that his mind would forever be on the march, always requiring something newer, better, and more perfect. Hours later, Aylmer returned carrying a crystal glass with a colorless liquid.
"The chemical process went perfectly," he said. "Unless all my science has tricked me, it cannot fail."
To test the liquid, he placed a drop in the soil of a dying flower growing in a pot in the room. In a few moments, the plant became healthy and green once more.
"I do not need proof," Georgiana said quietly. "Give me the glass. I'm happy to put my life in your hands."
She drank the liquid and immediately fell asleep. Aylmer sat next to his wife, observing her and taking notes. He noted everything: her breathing, the movement of an eyelid. He stared at the birthmark. And slowly, with every breath that came and went, it lost some of its brightness.
"By heaven, it's nearly gone," said Aylmer. "Success! Success!"
He opened the window coverings to see her face in daylight. She was so pale. Georgiana opened her eyes and looked into the mirror her husband held. She tried to smile as she saw the barely visible mark.
"My poor Aylmer," she said gently. "You have aimed so high, with so high and pure a feeling. You have rejected the best the earth could offer. I am dying, dearest."
It was true. The hand on her face had been her link to life. As the last trace of color disappeared from her cheek, she gave her last breath. Blinded by a meaningless imperfection and an impossible goal, Aylmer had thrown away her life, and with it, his chance for happiness. In trying to improve his lovely wife, he had failed to realize she had been perfect all along.
The Birthmark was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It was adapted and produced by Dana Demange. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.